Welcome back to another episode of Unprintable. I'm your host today, Jason Frummer. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Frummer. You can follow Unprintable at iTunes, Stitcher, and Blog Talk Radio. We're part of the Shaw Media Podcast Network. Today we're talking about a lot of entertainment stuff. Suicide Squad came out this past weekend, this past Thursday evening, Friday morning, somewhere around there. So I've got Nicole standing by to talk about that. We've also got a couple dialogues between a few of my other coworkers, Dan Mott, who's been on the podcast before, and Lester Johnson, who is a new voice to the podcast. We'll be talking about a little bit of music. Dan and I will talk about the new Deer Hunter singles that just came out. Lester and I will be talking about the new St. Paul and the Broken Bones singles that just came out. Promises to be a pretty entertainment, fun-filled podcast. So let's get right to it. We've got Nicole standing by, like I said earlier. She is raring to go talking about Suicide Squad. So, Nicole, how you doing?
Doing good. I am all ready to talk. I finally saw it, and it was interesting. It was definitely different.
It wasn't exactly what I expected, but I think that was a really good thing. I'm glad it wasn't what I expected it to be.
Yeah, I think the trailers gave you the impression it was going to be like a mile a minute on jokes and all the stuff. And like one of the great things from the trailer wasn't even in the movie. The what are you having drinks type thing.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So that was a funny bit from the trailers that wasn't even in the movie.
Yeah, it didn't
you
even
see
make
a lot
the
of
final
that.
Cut. Yeah.
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 But I thought it was interesting. I thought the characters were a little shallow, except for I thought that Harley Quinn was really, really fleshed out and great. Floyd Lawton, Deadshot, played by Will Smith, again, really fleshed out, really good.
Yes.
Other than those two and maybe the Rick Flagg character, there's a lot of, like, really surface level things going on.
I thought the same thing, very surface level. Even when you've got a lot of, like, you get some emotional inner turmoil between some of the characters, but it's pulled out very late in the film, and it's not, it doesn't build their character. It kind of makes you feel bad right toward the end, but there's not a lot of like, oh man, I can really see the struggle with these characters that they're going through this whole time. It's kind of like, okay, now something's about to happen, so we're going to try and pull at your heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah. I will say I really enjoyed Viola Davis playing Amanda Waller.
Oh my God, she was perfect.
Perfect in all of her scenes.
So perfect.
And just so, you just want to know more of what's going on. Like, she just straight up kills a bunch of people because they're a liability.
Right.
And you're like, the other dude doesn't even bat an eyelash at that either.
Right. Like, this is how much of a total, like, monster she is. Like, she's ruthless. She's absolutely ruthless. She's definitely a by any means necessary character. That is for certain. And I think she seems like the antithesis of Marvel's
Nick Fury. Okay.
I'm saying, like, she's the antithesis of Nick Fury. Like, she's the total opposite end of the spectrum. Same type of power, same type of of control, but she's doing things in a totally different manner. Like, these are things that Nick Fury would probably be like, okay, we got to figure out how to stop this from happening. And she's like, I know how to stop it from happening. I'll just kill everybody.
It seems effective so far.
Right, so far.
Except for that whole Enchantress getting loose, which you were right. She was the big bad. You were right.
I called it. I called it, and I was skeptical after seeing more of the trailers, but I have to say I was glad that happened. I don't know. Are we just going to go into spoilers here? We're just going to rush into the spoilers?
I think I already spoiled things with Amanda Waller just killed some people. I guess I wasn't really specific on who said people
were.
Right.
But yeah,
I would say we could do a little more on the less spoilery things where we talk about some of the special effects being fantastic.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about, without going too heavily into the spoilers, I want to talk about how quickly DC is ushering in the use of the fantastic and the magical than Marvel has been issuing into it. Marvel's been based rooted in science mostly, and DC seems to really be rushing headlong into the fantastic with the use of magic and ancient abilities that are awakened. Mm-hmm. I like that they're doing that, and it kind of, well, I think it will set them apart because we've obviously got Doctor Strange coming out, which I don't know how it's not going to be rooted in the fantastic and be magical.
It looks pretty fantastic based on the trailer.
It does. So if they are trying to find a way to hone science into that, it's going to be really, really stretching it. But I think, you know, Marvel's got at least 6 years, I think about 6 years on DC ushering in their movies. So, you know, I think DC's just kind of ramping up and trying to get there faster than Marvel is now.
I think the interesting thing is that it worked in a way that I thought was accessible. You know, we were already pretty like, okay, we've got a guy who has a skin condition. We've got a guy who's just these metahumans, which is what they keep calling them, which is what you're going to see with like Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already seen that in the TV Green Arrow Flashverse, where you have people who have special abilities. They're born with them or they get them through some means.
Right.
And you have like Diablo is a metahuman in this. He was born with the ability to manipulate fire, and that's grown throughout his life. Then you have Killer Croc, who has got a skin condition, born with a skin condition in that.
See, and that
escalated.
That character to me is confusing because, I mean, it depends on what incarnation of Waylon Jones we're talking about, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, he just was born that way. He didn't really have any kind of, I mean, I guess he would have to have a nationality of some sort. But they really like played up on that in the movie, and I didn't know how I felt about that. It just felt like you were stereotyping a character that already had a lot of things that you could be pointing out that were, you know, different about him. Why did you have to move to a stereotype on that character?
I don't think they knew what they were doing with Killer Croc, who has like a cool look and a rough reputation, and they kind of just threw him in there.
Right.
He was helpful because he can swim really good.
Right.
He lives underground. I thought it was interesting too with Katana. Like, they really didn't flesh out her story very much, other than like there was another one where it's like, that's a really interesting character that they just scratched the surface of.
Right.
She's just there. She never even takes off her mask with the Suicide Squad. She's just there to kick ass and take names.
Yeah, and they don't tell you, like, okay, where did she come from? Flag's like, oh, Katana, you're late. And then she's like, sorry, you know, I was busting up some Yakuza somewhere, and I thought they might have a lead to something I was looking for. And it's like, well, I mean, that doesn't really tell us a lot about stuff. Now, you know, we get an idea for this character, and she still has a lot of her comic book abilities, and a lot of the things with the sword are straight out of the comic book. You know, stealing the souls of its victims. Her husband's in the sword, just like in the comic book. But yeah, you're right. You don't know about her. You don't know what she's dealing with. You don't know anything about her other than the fact that she's Japanese and a badass.
Mm-hmm.
And then she lost her husband. And that's it.
Yep. And that Flag trusts her.
But you're never told, like, was she labeled, I mean, obviously she's a vigilante, but was she labeled a threat, or was she incarcerated as a result of the vigilante she had become? Was she on a list and told that she was going to be put in prison?
I get the sense she was a volunteer.
I kind of got that sense too, but I think a lot of it was left up to the imagination at some points, and I wanted something that was more concrete with these characters.
Speaking of not a lot of concrete things, Captain Boomerang. He seemed so out of place, right?
What a total waste of a character. They could have done so many great things with him, and they failed. Like, I feel like they missed the mark completely on Captain Boomerang.
I didn't hate the characterization.
Oh, I didn't hate it either.
I just don't think he was helpful.
Right.
He did, like, one thing that was helpful, I feel like. Yeah. One thing.
What's the deal with that unicorn? It's never answered.
Yeah.
The whole movie never answered.
Maybe there's a deleted scene that explains his love of pink unicorns.
I guess.
I did think that the Enchantress looked really interesting. And the way they manifested her powers was definitely an interesting thing there. I was a little skeptical with, like, okay, we're getting this crazy character who's clearly supposed to be, like, this ancient, you know, as Aztec-type style
right.
character played by this white chick. I didn't really get that.
I didn't either.
But it made sense
it did,
they showed it.
Yeah, once the movie takes you there, it makes more sense. And she's another character that I felt like we could have had so much more inner turmoil with her because of what she is. And they didn't even, like, they showed us a little bit of that struggle, but I felt like you could have had a lot more with that character. A lot more.
They don't even really specify. Those could have been aliens. We don't know.
Right. We have no idea.
They did not really give us much on that, which is, they're keeping it open. They're keeping it easy.
Right. Did you have a very, without spoiling too much here, did you have a very Zool feel from her at one point? I really felt like she was given a big Zool vibe there from Ghostbusters.
I could see that. I did not get that. Mostly, I think, because the way they characterized her and her brother.
The one working with her. Yeah, yeah. Somebody else working with her.
There's a lot of, like, I don't know what's going on, but it's happening. And it was a little busy at the times, too. I thought the action was cool and interesting, but I think it lacked focus in sometimes.
Yeah. Let's talk
which is also a critique I would have for a lot of the Avengers type movies sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, it's all over the place because they're trying to cram like a dozen different people. You got an ensemble cast and you're trying to focus so much on every individual character in a movie like Avengers, in a movie like Suicide mm-hmm. Squad, which is mm-hmm. why I feel going back to Civil War mm-hmm. it made more sense because it's a Captain America movie. So you understand why you're getting more Captain America than everybody else.
And we got a lot more of Harley Quinn and a lot more of Deadshot.
And I was glad for that. I was Deadshot's story, like, that really made me feel for that character. And
I would agree. I teared up a little bit.
Yeah, that made me.
That one scene with his daughter.
That made me feel a lot for that character. And I, you know, I love the interaction with him. I love how, you know, he kind of just, without thinking about it, without realizing that there's any kind of moral struggle going on within him, he accepts mm-hmm. the fact that he's a bad guy. He doesn't accept the fact that there are these gray areas in his life. He just, at first, he's just like, I'm a bad guy, that's it, that's what I do, I'm just a bad guy.
Yeah.
And I loved that development of that character throughout the whole movie.
You can see why Will Smith picked this role and why he was pumped about playing this character.
He was so good for it. He was so good for Deadshot. Just like Harley Quinn, what's her name? The actress that plays her.
Margot Robbie.
Yes. She was I could not have picked out a better Harley Quinn. That was amazing. Yeah. I did not like the fact that, and many males may disagree with me, but why did her ass get more screen time than Slipknot?
To be fair, I actually thought they did a pretty good job considering how prominent her character is and how revealing her costume is on the when it comes to that.
Yeah.
I thought they did a pretty good job of, other than the specific scenes where they were talking, like it was used, like everybody was looking at her.
Right, right.
They did a pretty good job of not making that a focal point.
They did. I felt like, you know, she...
I mean, when you're on a giant screen, it's going to take up some space if you right. have any sort of shot where she's hot. And it's just, it's, to be fair, it's exposed.
Right, right.
You know.
Her costume kind of lends itself to the exposure of certain areas of the body. But I do think that, well, throughout the DC universe, Harley Quinn has been an overly sexualized character up until recently, where she is... she's kind of a good guy now and very, very rooted in feminism, which that's great. That's great. That shows, you know, there's a landmark in comic books too, which is awesome. But Harley Quinn's always been that overly sexualized character throughout the entire DC universe. You can see it even in the 90s Batman animated mm-hmm. series where it's very apparent. And that was a show for kids.
That was a very interesting show for kids.
Yeah, yes,
I do think
definitely.
It's one of those things where her character... When she's paired with the Joker, she's controlled by the Joker in a lot of ways. And you get that arc too. Do we want to get into a little bit of spoilery things here?
We can go into a little bit of the idea that their relationship is definitely
toxic,
and I would also say symbiotic in a way, where you can tell they feed off
parasitic.
Each other.
Parasitic.
There you go. Yes, that's
parasitic
a better one.
Parasitic seems like a better one because it's very negative.
Yes, it's very parasitic. That's a better way to describe it.
Symbiotic seems like they're. I guess in some ways they probably see it as symbiotic.
Right.
But it's literally parasitic.
It's caustic, no doubt.
Well, for sure. I do think that was interesting the way they did. We were right. A lot of that stuff was backstory that they were showing with the Joker. And I do think that was interesting. We got to see some Batfleck.
I like that.
We even saw some flashes of other characters.
We did see some flashes of other characters. Nicely done. I see what you did there.
Blah, blah.
But that was to kind of go back into what I was saying about why I could see some people might not like this movie was if you didn't know this universe, or let's say you saw it without seeing Batman versus Superman, you'd be like, what the hell is happening right now? What is going on? And I know some of these characters in DC Universe are very commonplace and they're obvious to certain people. But to someone like my wife who went to see it, she was very unfamiliar with these characters. Even being unfamiliar with it, she still said she liked it. But I could see why somebody who was unfamiliar with the universe, unfamiliar with the lore and the characters, would say this movie is weird and sucked and I didn't understand it.
Yeah, my boyfriend thought it was okay. And he's one who's not like terribly versed in it. Mm-hmm. Like he knows the big picture stuff.
Right.
You know, but he wasn't religiously watching the animated cartoons of the 90s like we were.
Right, exactly. And one of the biggest complaints that I hear, and this might actually be a good thing, take it however you want, was I hear people say, Jared Leto was great as the Joker, but he really was not, you know, Heath Ledger. And I think, you got to understand, that's totally different incarnation of the Joker. You're dealing with a totally different vibe. And while, yes, I believe Heath Ledger did set the bar for the live-action Joker, you've got to understand that this character has gone through so many incarnations in his lifetime that there are just so many different ways that they are portrayed. And I feel like Jared Leto's Joker was more akin to the Under the Red Hood Joker from that animated movie. I don't know if you saw that one.
I did not. I was thinking it was interesting that they went to. He had been in one point in the past more of a gangster, the king of crime.
Right.
And he got back to the gangster aspects of that character again. But it's just the gangster aspects of that character in the 21st century.
Right.
It's a little bit like of that, you know, he's got the grill, he's got the street, you know. Those are, you know, the organized crime is less, you know, the Italian mob here, and it's more like
He's got the face tattoos, he's got the the flashy guns, like that gold AK-47 he's shooting, like come on, that's total 21st century gangster style weaponry there.
You know, we didn't see much character development, but he got a lot of screen time.
He did get a lot of screen time for it being a movie not about the Joker at all. For being a movie about Suicide Squad and being a movie about Harley Quinn and Deadshot, essentially, I feel like he got a lot of really good screen time, and we got to see a lot of this person who's just absolutely insane. Like, there was that scene that you see in the trailer where he's laying in that circle of knives. I didn't understand. Like, was that just because he was in mourning that he did that? I didn't get it. Because then, did you see all the stuff that's laying around?
I think he was coming.
Circle?
He was getting ready.
Like that's
it looked
what...
like he was just, that's his arsenal, and he's picking out what he wants, his favorite things to come get his plug.
Did you see all the things that were in that circle, though?
It was a lot.
There were onesies.
Yeah.
There were
that
baby onesies.
I was like, well, that kind of played into a later thing.
Yeah, I think that was kind of a tie into that. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So maybe they've got big plans for their lives together. they're maybe not the most functional people, but they do have a genuine affection that seems to play through.
They do. They do. Like we said, that parasitic relationship that they could deem symbiotic is mm-hmm. they still love each other, and it's such an intense love that you're willing to die or even kill the other person because you love them so much. Like,
yeah.
It's an overwhelming love that is driven by some sort of psychotic lapse in their brains.
They got broken. So it should be for interesting sure. to see. And I will say, you know, it's another one. You got to stay till the very, there's a mid-credit scene. There's not an after-credit scene. But
yeah,
there's a mid-credit
it's mid-credit.
Scene.
So watch out for that. I don't want to say what it is, but yeah.
It's more world-building.
Yes.
I will say that.
Yes. It's not just here are these characters and it's a brief snippet of what's happening. It's
not shawarma?
It is kind of important.
Would you characterize it on a scale of is it better than some of the other more recent DC films?
I would say it's
where do you rank it?
Definitely better than Batman vs. Superman. I think it blows Batman vs. Superman out of the park as a movie in and of itself. However, I can't speak to the Wonder Woman, Justice League, or any other.
Well, let's just say if we go, okay, there's only been three movies in this new iteration.
Right.
So we got Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Suicide Squad. I would say it's the best of those three.
I would agree 100%. With
I think
Man of Steel being the second, and then Batman vs. Superman being kind of the worst right now out of them.
I do like some things about it, though.
Oh, no, I do, too. I do, too. Because the use of Wonder Woman in Batman vs. Superman was fantastic. That was probably one of my favorite parts.
I just assume Wonder Woman is going to knock the rest of these movies out of the park. Like, it's going to be like when The Dark Knight came along
mm-hmm.
after, like, Green Lantern.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Well, I think everybody wants to forget about Green Lantern.
It's like the original Justice League. Are we getting Green Lantern eventually?
We would have
we
to.
We don't know.
But
they're gonna, but they haven't got anything.
He deals more with the alien idea, though, and we have not been introduced to Alien yet.
Yes, we have. Man of Steel.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That movie, Superman.
Oh, duh. Okay.
What are you talking
sorry.
About?
Sorry. Okay. We have not been introduced to that type of alien entity yet.
Okay.
I guess would be a more appropriate thing. I think with the introduction, okay, if they are in fact going to introduce Darkseid into the new Justice League movie or build up to the big bad being Darkseid, I think we're going to get Green Lantern coming in there somewhere.
That seems like it would be appropriate.
Very, very. But it would also be appropriate.
See.
It would also be appropriate if Martian Manhunter showed up as well, but they're using him in Supergirl right now, and I don't know if that's going to be a canon tie-in or not.
I think it's more of a multiverse thing.
Okay.
They've kind of established that as a multiverse.
Okay.
So you can have the different entities in different places.
Right. Well, then I definitely think they'd have to introduce Green Lantern around the same time they introduce Martian Manhunter.
I really like Martian Manhunter. I hope we get Martian Manhunter. But I will say Suicide Squad, all in all, it's enjoyable.
It is.
It is pretty violent. I don't know if it's necessarily a kid-friendly one.
Yeah.
You're older kids. You're like 12-year-olds,
right.
10-year-olds maybe.
Right. I'd say
for sure.
I'd say it's on par with how the level of inappropriateness that Civil War was to a younger audience is probably
yes, I would
the
agree.
Same level on Suicide Squad. Only on a different end of the spectrum, where you had more of a serious take on your violence and political discord with Civil War. This is more of your raunchy, violent
yes.
with Suicide Squad. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, too, though, at least, you know, the big, when it comes point blank, the people are being killed, but, you know, there's
yes.
a point where it's not like, this is not a human being, per se.
Okay, let's say out of five, what do you give it?
Three?
Yeah, I was going to say
3.5. 3.5,
yeah,
maybe.
Definitely 3.5 on my scale, that's for sure. Okay, awesome.
It was enjoyable, for sure.
It was.
Harley Quinn, MVP. Amanda Waller.
Oh, yeah.
Right there. And Will Smith's always good.
Always good. You can't go wrong. If Will Smith's on the bill, you know it's going to be good. Well,
you know he's going to be good in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yes, exactly. Because I was thinking of Men in Black 2. Which actually wasn't bad now that I'm sitting down thinking about it.
I really enjoyed it. I don't know why you're hating on Men in Black 2.
No, I'm thinking about it now. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? For what it was, that was good. Okay, Wild West.
Yes, but he was still fun in that.
Right, yeah.
I should have liked that movie, too, because it's ridiculous. It's a terrible movie.
Right,
but it's
right.
So much fun.
But Will Smith
makes
it so much
fun. And I think this might be what Suicide Squad is. It might be kind of bad, but so much fun.
Yes. That's a good way to put it. All right, well, thank you so much, Nicole. Nicole Franz, everybody, you can follow her on Twitter, at Franz or Foe. Thank you again for being on. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Take it easy. I want to thank Nicole for joining us on her day off. She called in to talk a little bit about Suicide Squad with me. Good talk, Nicole. Thank you very much. We've got Dan Mott coming up. He'll be talking with me about the new Deer Hunter singles that just dropped. Dan and I love the Deer Hunter, so I figured there was no one more qualified to talk with me about the Deer Hunter than Dan. And then one of our resident soul experts, Les Johnson, is going to come in the studio and talk about the new St. Paul and the Broken Bones. Les is in a band. He's a singer, so he has firsthand experience what it takes to be a singer and why the guy from St. Paul and the Broken Bones is absolutely amazing at it. So he knows a little bit about what it takes to be a singer, so I figured he'd be the qualified guy to talk with about St. Paul and the Broken Bones. That's all coming up right after I tell you about Loot Crate. Because Loot Crate, as we all know from the times I've mentioned it, is a box you can get in the mail. And it's chock full of just amazing stuff. You got 6 to 8 really cool geek, gamer, nerd items. And this month, we are delving into the theme of anti-hero. Bad guys doing good things for the wrong reasons, good guys with questionable tactics and morals, exclusive content from DC Comics, Archer, Dark Horse, Kill Bill, and you get some great collectibles, you get a t-shirt, you get a pin, you get a wearable, you get all of that for under $20. And if you go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, enter promo code Shaw, you get $3 off your new subscription. So check it out, get on there, because if you miss this crate of anti-hero stuff, you won't be able to get it again. The 19th is the cutoff. lootcrate.com/Shaw. Enter promo code Shaw. Get your box. $3 off your new subscription. We're going to take a quick break now, but coming up after the break, we have a lot of music to talk about. We've got Deer Hunter and St. Paul and the Broken Bones coming up after this short break, so stick with us right here on Unprintable. We are back in the studio. We've got Dan Mott here.
Hello, everybody.
Dan, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about two singles that were recently dropped by a band that you and I love very much, The Deer Hunter.
Yes.
And this is in, this is a follow-up to Act 4, Rebirth and Reprise. This is the new act, Act 5, coming out. And Casey of The Deer Hunter actually said he is taking it out of commission and act sooner than he originally planned on it. So this will be the last act in the series. Act 5 coming up will be the last one. That's released September. What are your feelings on this?
Man, I'm so excited. So I think the latest single just came out. We're recording today is August 8th, and I believe it came out on August 5th. Mm-hmm. So about 3 days ago. So the revival was what just came out. Mm-hmm. And apparently, before that, Gloria was out. I had no idea, which I was sad about because being such a big fan, I didn't realize that he had already they had already put those singles out. So we just listened to them today, and I couldn't be more excited about this album. What's really great is that in the songwriting and the way the music is performed, it still keeps with that, you know, consistency of the
the various acts that he's done before.
Well, and the various sound.
The various sounds, yes.
So all of that is there, and it's consistent with the other albums that it all kind of flows together.
There's an intertwining feeling to a lot of the tracks where you'll hear, like, reprises of certain songs you've heard in previous acts, and you'll hear kind of new spins on old verses or new takes on on a certain riff that'll be thrown into a song that might sound completely different than the song it was originally used in, but it ties it all together with some sort of, like I said, riff that's being thrown into this new song that you've heard in other acts. So I do like that aspect about it as well.
But what's really cool is that he, Casey, has introduced some new sound into this one too. And, you know, when you sit there and you listen to, I believe it's on the Glorious track, you get this amazing guitar solo in there. Right off the bat, I think that we had said that it kind of feels like you know, like Genesis, or you had mentioned
there was there's a track by Santana called Dance. I think it's Dance Sister Dance, yeah. Something like that. And there's a crazy like instrumental portion at the end of that where there's like some amazing guitar solos. And that, to me, felt a lot like that. A lot of that prog rock guitar feel coming through. And you, like you had mentioned, Genesis, I can hear that a lot coming through on the sounds in every other act, but especially on this act where we haven't heard a guitar solo like this used before. You can kind of hear how that sound almost ties together other tracks in these acts, but that guitar solo is unlike anything we've heard from other tracks before, and I love that.
It just is it's a real testament to this guy's art, and as an artist, for me, it goes beyond music, and it actually is a piece of art, and it's just. I cannot wait for this whole album. It's just going to be incredible.
I can't wait for the day that I'm able to put all acts side by side and listen to them all chronologically. And like that's going to be an awesome day when I get to do that.
Yeah, and so for those of you that are Deer Hunter fans, the Deer Hunter is actually coming to Chicago September 21st to the Metro. And I've only seen them at the house in DeKalb, so they don't disappoint. It's from what I can tell from news on their site and on their Facebook page, it looks like they are doing their full tour with the Awesome Orchestra.
Yeah, that was who Casey paired with on these last two albums to help him arrange music and arrange pieces for these last two acts, which I think shows through in spades how amazing he is at writing, not just his own, you know, the music he plays. He's able to write for an entire orchestra and compose this music for an entire orchestra and tell a story through all these different instruments that he may not have excessive knowledge of how to play, but he's able to utilize all of them to the fullest potential.
And even if they do come to the Metro and they don't have the full orchestra with them, their sound is absolutely incredible, even as just their band without that backing orchestra. I highly recommend to get tickets and go see this band. It won't disappoint.
Especially at an intimate venue. I mean, we saw them at an incredibly intimate venue, but as far as intimate venues in Chicago are concerned, I feel like the Metro is definitely one of those smaller venues where no matter where you're standing in the Metro, you're bound to have a good view of the stage.
Would the Metro – I have not been to a show at the Metro. Would it allow the space for him to bring, even if it was a more like downsized orchestra?
If he brought like a quartet or something, I could see that working. But a full orchestra, I don't think that would accommodate a full orchestra and his band.
It'll be interesting to see sort of the reviews of that show and what they do wind up showing up with. What I'm also excited about, as much as I love the act albums, I'm excited that if this is indeed his last one, perhaps this opens up the doors to more collaboration stuff. He did do a collaboration with Manchester Orchestra, and that was incredible. And I'd love to see more of that stuff. I know he's worked with other bands as well. I'd love to see him work with a few more other bands. And maybe we get back to more of that harder feel that Migrant had.
Yeah, there were some, and it's the interesting thing about Migrant is it kind of to me was like Casey's way of taking the Color Spectrum albums that he had done in the past, all those EPs that he had done in the past, and kind of finding the best sounds of all of those different colors from the Color Spectrum and turning them into individual songs on Migrant. And I feel like he did that really well on Migrant, and it's a great standalone piece. It's a divergent from his regular stories that he's telling throughout the rest of the ACT albums. It still kind of held that sound. Like, you could hear, if you wanted to take these songs from Migrant, you could potentially hear them on specific ACT albums. You know, like you said, if he gets back to that harder feel, like, there were a lot of songs that had, based on what he wrote on his website, on the band's website, it feels like almost he's ready to do something totally different and flip the script completely, which I'm happy about, but also a little disheartened that we're taking a departure from this sound, because his sound is unlike anything you can find anywhere else.
Well, maybe this opens up the doors too to a new series of work. Maybe he like the Color Spectrum, that had to come to an end at some point, and he probably feels like he's told the story he wants to tell with the acts, which, again, we talked about this several podcasts ago. We did a review of their show here in DeKalb, and we were sort of talking about the way those albums flow and the story that they actually tell. And so if he feels like this needs to be the end and he's done telling this story, perhaps he's just got a whole new story up in his head that he wants to start on. Maybe it's a completely different sound that we're going to hear. And I mean, it's just, the guy is a true artist, and yeah. I can't wait to hear more. It's just like even when this album is out, I'm going to finish listening to it, and I'll be like, when's the next one? Like,
right.
Just giving us more music.
That's exactly how I felt about Act 4. I was like, when I finished listening to it, I was like, come on, where's the next one already? I need to hear it. So of the two singles that were released, we have The Revival and Gloria. What did you feel about – I think we talked about this. We felt Gloria was the stronger of the two.
Yeah, they're both awesome. But yeah, Gloria has for me, has a little bit more of the sound that some of these other songs have throughout the acts.
Mm-hmm.
And, I love that The Revival stands on its – it feels like it stands on its own. It's a little bit different sound.
It feels a lot like – it feels like it has a little bit more of a vaudeville feel to it almost.
Yeah.
You listen to this song and you can kind of see the villain tying the damsel in distress to the train tracks almost.
And I love the title of this album is Act 5, Hymns with the Devil in Confessional. I think that just sort of paints a picture to a little bit of the dark sound that you're going to hear out of this, like you were saying, kind of this damsel in distress kind of thing.
You get that sinister feel. While it seems a little bit lighthearted at first, there's that really, really sinister undertone to what's actually taking place in all of this.
If you are interested right now, the Deer Hunter does have a pre-order of this album available through Equal Vision Records. So get on there. I think there's a couple different packages you can get. If you're just looking to pre-order the vinyl album.
Or the CD.
Yeah, or the CD. Yeah. They have that by itself. But you can also get some really sweet bundles. I know that there's currently there's a bundle that, you get a t-shirt. You could also get coffee. We saw this morning.
There was a specific roast of coffee that's coming out to I guess you can pair it with the album. Pair this coffee roast with the album. And then also there's a book of matches that looks like it's from The Dime, which, for those of you who don't know the story of The Dime in Casey's act, it's kind of the brothel where a lot of debauchery takes place, and our main villain, who also acts as our main righteous person in the story, is the owner of that, and he's also the preacher at the church, which the church is the kind of the dime at night. Or the church in the morning is church, but at night it's the dime. And yeah, this guy runs the whole scheme.
So some really cool bundles out there that offer up some really awesome keepsakes as well. And again, all of that is available through Equal Vision Records or on the Deer Hunters website. I believe it's thedeerhunter.com, or I think through their Facebook page and through their Spotify page.
Yeah, you could buy their merchandise through all of those venues. So you're welcome, Deer Hunter. Free advertising.
So in closing with that, Jason, I appreciate you having me on to discuss this, and I'll just say that, you know, it's going to be exciting to hear how this all comes together, how it ends. Even though it's coming to an end, it's sort of bittersweet.
Very bittersweet.
Because you know, we just want to keep hearing more, but it's cool that we get to hear the end and see what's in store for the future with the Deer Hunter.
Yes, and again, thank you for being on. So I couldn't have picked anybody else to talk about this
one. I will come back on with you once this album is out, and we'll review the full album.
And we'll talk about the whole album. But right now, we're just left with The Revival and Gloria. So check them out on Spotify. Check them out on YouTube. Go to Deer Hunter's page and listen to them. You are going to love what you hear if you like progressive rock, or if you love the Deer Hunter, or if you just love beautifully arranged music. You're just going to absolutely love it. So thanks a lot, Dan.
Yeah.
So we are back in the studio now. Lester Johnson joins us. Les, how you doing today?
Doing great.
First time on the podcast here. How you feeling?
I feel great. It's summer, good. And what more do you want?
Exactly. So I brought you in today because you are kind of a go-to guy for this band I want to talk about. Like, if there's anybody in the office I'm going to talk to about this band, it's going to be you. St. Paul and the Broken Bones. We got a new single for them recently. It looks like there are two singles out, one of which, All I Ever Wonder, we're not certain if it's going to be on the new album, but this Flow With It is definitely going to be on the new album.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Sea of Noise.
You know, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, they've been on my radar for a while. 2014, they kind of, you know, came into existence as far as the public and most people know. You know, they're from Birmingham, Alabama. They really have this amazing, unique soul sound that, you know, that ability to sound old but be new. And that's really what I love about it. In this new song, it's Flow With It, You Got Me Feeling Like. And, you know, it's really funky. It's really, really catchy and grooving. And, you know, if you're a fan of that neo-soul type movement, if you're a fan of, you know, the stuff that really makes you feel good, that you feel down deep in your bones, St. Paul and the Broken Bones is a band for you, because these guys, you know, they just do it in a way that, you know, lyrics are good. The music is tight. They've got a big band, you know, playing it. They've got horns. They've got a fantastic rhythm section. But really the star of the show is the singer, Paul Janaway. And this is a guy that when most people see him, they're pretty much blown away. And, you know, this is a guy that at one time was going to be a preacher, was going to be an accountant. You know, this is a guy that really puts his heart and soul into every note he sings.
And it shows. I mean, it definitely shows in what you're hearing on the albums. It shows when you see them live. It shows even, like, their recorded performances when they do the videos. When you see him out there, like, he is belting these notes out with everything that he's got. I mean, the look on his face, you can just tell that he's pulling this down from way down deep in the soul there, and he's pulling it all out. Now, the thing I like most about them is when I first heard them, I was like, this is totally new. This is like Otis Redding right here. This is what it reminds me of, totally,
yeah.
100%.
It's, well, and, you know, two of his really big influences coming up were Sam Cooke and Marvin Gaye, and he came up in a really strict kind of religious family, and it was kind of work for him to listen to that kind of stuff, and those early influences really come out in their music and in his voice. And one thing I always look to when it comes to a singer is believability. Can you believe what they're saying? Can you believe what they're singing? And I'm telling you, this guy is so believable, it's unreal. And this new single, Flow With It, it's hot. I mean, it really sounds good. It sounds a lot like, you know, what their first album, which is called Half the City, mm-hmm. that came out in 2014, yeah. Sounds a lot like that. It just sounds a little more grown up, sounds a little more polished and produced.
Like,
and
they're really finding their bearings.
They're
now
really advancing, and you know, they went to the real school of music, which is touring.
Yeah.
And getting on the road, and that's really where you get your chops when it comes to music.
We were talking earlier how the last single that was released, All I Ever Wonder, was almost a departure from their original sound, and I'm kind of glad they brought it back with Flow With It, You Got Me Feeling.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, as a band and being someone who's into music and likes to perform music, you know, you're going to throw things at the wall and see what sticks, and by all means, it still sounds good. It just, I think when you have that real pocket sound that they have and they kind of achieve on this Flow With It single, when you depart from it, people notice. But, you know, it's still them. You can still tell it is just a little bit different than some of their other tunes. But, you know, if you like this song, Flow With It, their new album, See a Noise, you know, drops, I would highly recommend picking that up and always go back and, you know, grab their first record,
oh, yeah,
which is fantastic, yeah, as well. And that's Half the City. And, you know, this new single, it like I say, you can definitely hear when you listen to the older album, you listen to this new album, definitely a little more produced, a little more polished, really, you know, sounds good. And time in the studio well spent for these guys, for sure.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, that drops on the 9th, that's Tuesday, and pick it up, listen to it. You can check out the new single on Spotify right now if the whole album's not up there. But Les, thank you so much for coming into the studio and talking. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem. And, you know, soul music, we can never let it die. So, you know, these guys, they're right up my alley, and I think you'll like them too. So check them out, because soul music has got to stay around.
You got to keep it alive.
That's right.
Got to keep it alive. Thanks a lot, man.
Right on.
Well, that's our show for today, kids. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. I love talking about music, and I loved talking about Suicide Squad. I want to thank Nicole Franz for joining us on her day off. That was really nice of her to call in and talk Suicide Squad with me. She didn't have to do that, but she did, and I greatly appreciate it. I want to thank Dan Mott for joining me in the studio, and I want to thank Lester Johnson for coming in here and putting his two cents in about the new St. Paul and the Broken Bones track. And check out the Deer Hunter singles as well. They're up on Spotify right now. You can find a lyric video up for The Revival that's out right now as well. Check those songs out. Get ready for the September release of that album, because I am so pumped for it. You can do the pre-order right now for that. Check out Suicide Squad too if you haven't already. Draw your own conclusions on that. I know there's a lot of negative criticism floating around out there, but I guess criticism is ultimately negative usually, unless it's constructive, in which case it's not super negative. Anyway, there's a lot of negativity surrounding Suicide Squad, and I think it's important to draw your own conclusions on that. So go see it, check it out, figure out what you think about it. Again, I want to thank all of our listeners, and I want to thank our sponsor, Loot Crate, because without our listeners, we wouldn't have anybody listening to us, and without Loot Crate, well, we wouldn't have a sponsor. So as always, I am Jason Frummer. You can follow me on Twitter, at Jason Frummer. You can follow Unprintable on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blog Talk Radio. It is part of the Shaw Media Podcast Network. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.